You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS. With Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Interqual.
Oh, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story to Robert Pattinson killed a clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right! I said tune in weekly.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, and that's my co-host, Jeff Bear.
Hello, everybody. I am Jeff Bear. That is Eric D. Snyder. This is our show.
So far, everything we've said is true. Welcome to October. It's fall. Do you smell that?
No.
Well.
What are you smelling?
I'm smelling, at first this morning, I thought that I was smelling the fires again. I thought the fires out in the gorge were back again.
Yeah.
But turns out it's the barbecue place next door to me. The food you pods.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Wait, that's a new barbecue place, right?
Yeah. And the food cart's right next to my apartment.
Now, have you memorized their menu? Can we talk about it?
No, I haven't. The time I was over there, they were about to open and not opened yet. And now they're open, I guess, because I smell them, but I haven't been over there.
The only reason I ask that is, like, I'm curious if they're a brisket place, if they're, you know, like, what they think their specialty is, if they think they have the best sausage in town, if you know what I mean, stuff like that.
What you really need to know is you need to know, what are they known for? What do other people say about this place?
No, I would first want to know what they think of their stuff, and then I would want to try it, and then I'd be curious about other people. If my wife was going, yes, she would want to know what other people think first.
Well, because here's how you recommend restaurants to people all the time. This is what they're known for. You should get this. This is what they're known for.
That's true.
Now, I don't know. Sometimes I guess that is based on your own experience.
That is technically based on me plus, unless I haven't been there, and then I do give the overall vibe that I've heard of other people. Because if I haven't been there, I typically haven't researched it online. I've just heard word of mouth stuff.
Sure. Well, this place is known for barbecue. You know, you've had barbecue before, right?
I had barbecue at I can't even remember the new food cart that I went to. Texas.
Let me ask you again. You've had barbecue before, right?
Yes, let's move on. If that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it tastes like that.
Whereas here's how we're different. I believe there's levels of quality with
There absolutely are.
And you think food is food.
No, there absolutely are levels of quality.
What are we again? Are we a movie podcast?
Sometimes.
Let's do that.
All right. Blade Runner 2049 or 2049, whichever you want.
It's up to you guys. It's really not. It's 2049.
2049.
It's not up to you anymore.
I'm putting
my foot down, apparently. Okay. As soon as you started to agree with me, now I'm putting my foot down. I have the confidence to do that.
All I have said for sure is that by the year 2049, I'll be saying 2049.
You're saying eventually I'll win.
Eventually, yes. Oh, man, I was just saying we shouldn't go off on any tangents.
Speaking of tangents, the original.
The original. I had never seen the original until they released the final cut or whatever they called it in 2007. And
really? Oh, interesting. Didn't realize that. Okay.
Because I missed it when it came out when I was, you know, 7 or 8 or whatever.
Right.
And then I never knew which version I was supposed to watch.
Yeah.
And so I watched this one in 2007. Saw that one twice because the first time didn't take. I watched it and didn't care for it much. I was like, well, this must be my fault. So I gave it another chance, and still, it just leaves me cold. A movie I admire or I respect more than I enjoy.
Completely for me too. The one thing I actually watched the original with Harrison Ford's voiceover narration, whatever, on just this last week, and what I realized was. Yes, that you know, noir voiceover is weird.
Yes.
But if you haven't seen the movie in a long time or you aren't familiar with the movie, it really serves a purpose.
Right.
Once you get familiar with it, yes, get rid of it and watch one of the other versions. But otherwise, it does let you know what's going through his mind.
Yeah.
And it's kind of necessary. Otherwise, it's just a terribly quiet film.
The sequel is set 30 years later. And for me, it leaves me feeling the same way the first one did. It doesn't do much for me, except that now it takes 45 minutes longer to not do it. It looks fantastic. It looks stunning. It looks beautiful and all dirty and futuristic. And I love the look of it. But I feel nothing. Do you feel anything? Do you like this one better than the first one?
I like this one better than the first one, but here's something that's weird. I don't know if I'm going to like this one better 2 weeks from now, because I just saw it last night. I saw it on the IMAX format, and goodness, did it look and sound just amazing.
I'm sure.
It has the Avatar effect for me a little bit. That is ultimately not enough. And during the process of watching the movie,
the Avatar effect being
looks and sound are not enough to make a movie. You actually need to have something compelling story-wise.
Right.
And the difference is Blade Runner is just flat out cooler. It's a cooler world. It's more of an adult sci-fi, obviously, yeah, than Avatar is. And Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford and Robin Wright and the technology, it's just cooler. And that's how I kept feeling about it. During the process, I was really loving it. And then maybe a half hour after I was done with it, you just start looking back at that story and going, did they have a point to this? Why did they do that? Like,
just
because it looked cool? And what is the ultimate purpose here? And why are they reimagining what transpired in the original just a little bit on occasion? And all these things are kind of just like, it's hollow. It is.
I feel more or less the same way. The story, it's like the first one. It's a procedural story with this cop. This would be Ryan Gosling. They call him K because his real name is a serial number, because he's a replicant, which they tell us in like the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Yep.
And which I think they tell us that so early to avoid debates, because the whole thing with the first one is people debating was Harrison Ford a replicant. So this one, they tell us right off. And so Kay knows he's a replicant. He knows that his memories, his supposed childhood memories, are false. They were part of his programming, whatever. And he goes around, he's tracking down the old version, the old kind of replicants, which were a little bit less obedient than the current models.
Yeah, the current models are supposedly just great and obedient because somebody else has bought the company.
Jared Leto. You put Jared Leto in charge of a company, he's going to clean things up in a
Even
hurry.
If he's blind, he can do it.
Especially
if
he's
blind.
That's
how good Jared Leto is at fixing other people's mistakes. But, you know, he's power hungry and he wants more. And the movie here, it is a procedural. And Ryan Gosling's job ultimately becomes some replicants are trying to figure out a way to live without humans again.
Right.
And this way is a more natural way that they've found.
Possibility that they might be procreating. And and Kay has to track down one of those particular replicants. And he's also looking for Deckard, who has disappeared and who may have information about how to track all this down.
I'm curious, how did you feel? It was probably like the first 20 to 30 minutes of the film. 20 to 30 minutes of the film, I thought I was watching a masterpiece. Dave Bautista's character was probably the best in the movie as far as compelling and heartfelt and everything.
I never felt like I was watching a masterpiece. No,
you didn't. Okay. And for me, it was like the little nods of noticing that he's a secondary citizen in the eyes of other cops and all this stuff and the technology. I was just in. And I even felt that. And again, I think it was a bit of a big screen manipulation when we're going from one scene to the next. It's normally a slow, beautiful car driving, car flying scene. And I just really liked looking around, just like Future Vegas.
Yeah,
I just liked looking around.
All the sci-fi elements are very good. Look very nice.
But I don't know did you feel like they kept showing their hand a little too much? Like what they thought was going to be a surprise was something that like I kind of had plenty of time to see. I felt like there was a little bit too much foreshadowing. And so there wasn't excitement.
I agree there was plenty of time. I don't remember thinking that anything was particularly overplayed or that I don't know
if it was necessarily overplayed. It was just maybe just played a little too much for my liking, because if you have that kind of time, intrigue and mystery can really help a lot. And I don't think they nailed intrigue and mystery. Love is an evil replicant here, and she's pretty cool, but at the same time, you don't know what anybody is capable of. I didn't know when a new replicant would be dead, what would kill them. What are their capabilities? I was unsure of that. So then it left some action sequences kind of cold.
They seem to have superhuman strength and resilience somewhat.
But they also seem to need air, I guess, and whatever. And they can bleed to death, obviously, just like the originals. There's things teased that I guess are prequel shorts, like a 10-day blackout. But otherwise, it's just kind of like, all right, you're mentioning something, but I don't get it.
The 10-day blackout, I thought it was very well done. I thought because I didn't feel like it was a tease. It was that's one of the things that happened since the last film, and it explains a couple of things about their technology and stuff.
It explains it also gets out of jail free, I think. There was also some conveniences, such as apparently an orphanage from 30 years from now has evolved into something very convenient that allows him to track still. Some humans are getting blown up with zero awareness for anybody else to care about or hear about, even though it's like rockets blasting.
Wasn't that orphanage what it always had been?
But
it was still that now, 30 years later? That was the impression I got, that it's just has always
you're
been.
Yes, you're actually right. You're totally right. Yes. The way it was described to me, it was yes. You're right.
I like the mood of the film. It's a melancholy and ponderous and sad and lonely, and it looks all of those feelings too, all ashy and post-apocalyptic and snowy and stuff. It's a movie with a lot of mood but no emotion, and it feels frigid and cold, and it just doesn't do much for me.
I had a lot of fun with Harrison Ford in this one, and I was kind of surprised by that, because sometimes it feels like Cowboys versus Aliens, he's just not doing enough for me.
No, he's definitely not phoning it in.
He's not phoning it in. It's really cool. And so him plus Gosling was enough to completely suck me in at the moment.
For the 45 minutes that they were both in the movie.
That's right. What was weird was in the third act, once you figure out the goal, it feels weird to then still have a lot of one-on-one moments. It feels like the movie wants to show you this bigger world. And my fear is, oh my gosh, are you really setting this up for multiple movies? Why wouldn't they be? Because you have 2 hours and 45 minutes. Why do you have to keep that's the thing. There is such a mixed message here of we have plenty of time. We're going to go slow, mm-hmm. but we're not going to fill that
with story.
Right. For me, I didn't feel that until after the movie was done. And then when it was done, it was just kind of like, all right. Okay.
Yeah. I had a big stretch in the middle where I was feeling impatient with it, even enjoying the visuals and liking the feel of it, just wanting it to get on with it. And I think it's I certainly don't begrudge anyone liking this movie or loving it. But same as the first one, for me, it just I lack whatever gene makes me affixed to these movies, and I'm not alone. There are many of us. We've been speaking up this week. Our voices have been silent for a long time, but we've been speaking up.
Should we name them?
There've been a few.
They outed themselves, but we learned what Matt Singer and Mike Ryan were the two that took the supposed most sci-fi nerd heat over admitting.
They're the two that sought the most sci-fi nerd heat and got it. Yes, I saw Will Goss tweeted some things that were exactly how I felt, including the part that I feel like it's one of those it's not you, it's me situations. I'm not connecting with these movies.
No, the only time you can officially pull out that card, and you've stated your case many times, is the Before trilogy.
Yes, the Before trilogy. does that for me.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke. Like that is, you're right. That is you. That is your problem. You need to work on that. Everything else so far as your opinions go, I'm allowing you to feel the way you feel.
I give Blade Runner 2049 minutes a C+.
I'm a higher on it because
you liked it better.
The cool factor and everything else. So to me, Blade Runner 2049 is a 7 out of 10.
All right. So Blade Runner 2049 is the big one this weekend. Unless you're a big fan of My Little Pony.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, My Little Pony, the movie, might be the big event for you this weekend. You know, I wonder which of those movies, Blade Runner and My Little Pony, will attract more sad, lonely men in their 40s.
Well, and hopefully the second one, officers can just be ready outside to take them away.
Yeah.
Hopefully that can be the case.
There was a screening of My Little Pony. It was last Saturday. And you want to know why I didn't go? Not the usual reason, which is that I just didn't want to because it was Saturday morning.
Right.
I forgot.
Oh.
Just totally forgot that it was even scheduled.
You tell me that's a Care Bears movie, I would have been a little bit more proactive in getting there. Mm. As a kid, I remember gravitating toward Care Bears and just thinking My Little Pony wasn't for me.
Oh, let me do the Jeff Baer method of seeing if it's a good animated film. Emily Blunt is one of the voices. Emily Blunt. Love her. Christian Chenoweth.
I'm just acknowledging. I'm not
Michael
saying
Pena.
It'll be good or bad.
You love Michael Pena.
Oh, I do. I bet that is good. My in-laws are in town and watched War on Everyone last night liked it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. they're pretty they have a very tiny list of things they dislike as far as the movie theater goes.
That's good.
And whatnot. Yeah.
And then also this movie, The Mountain Between Us, which there was also a screening of. It was during Fantastic Fest, so we missed it. This is the one with Idris Elba and Kate Winslet and Beau Bridges, Dermot Mulroney.
I was going to say. Dermot.
Yeah, and it's a plane crash. Two strangers must forge a connection to survive.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the plot. I'm in.
There you go.
I need to see that movie. I need to see The Battle of the Sexes.
Right, that came out when we missed.
American Made.
I saw American Made. Should I tell you about American Made?
Tell me about it.
All right, it's okay. It's all right. Doug Liman is the director and Tom Cruise. You've heard of international superstar Tom Cruise before.
And it's just okay with those two?
It's fine. It's an average good movie. it's a solid B, okay. A solid B movie. It's not great, it's not bad. It's
And even though if you adore movie star Tom Cruise, it's not enough to make you think it's because remember,
it is very good.
I somehow liked The Mummy a little bit more than you did.
That's true. The Cruise factor might change things a little bit, but and it's really good Tom Cruise. It's a good Tom Cruise performance. It's the kind of Tom Cruise you enjoy. So yeah, that's what I mean. It's a B, but okay. it's good in the average way that good movies are good.
Do you recall if any woman is allowed to be taller than Tom Cruise in the movie?
That's
my new passion.
Not that I noticed, but I doubt it. And also, he's not with women. It's mostly a guy movie. So he's not in the same shot as very many women very often.
Why do I feel like that should be Tom Cruise's new catchphrase? Or like that others say, he's not with women.
There you go. He's not really with women, if you know what I mean. Caleb Landry Jones is in it, too.
Oh.
All creepy looking.
Longer hair? Is that what that means?
I think he has a mullet, and he's also shirtless in one scene, all pale and pasty and hairless.
He's not just one big freckle when his shirt's off?
No. Mm-mm.
That's kind of what my hunch was.
Yeah,
thought
no,
he was
not.
Just one solid freckle.
Nope, it's for added creepiness. He's no freckles. American Made. It's a true story. It's boats. Tom Cruise is a guy in the 80s who became a drug runner for the CIA, helping out with all the Noriegas down there and the things with Nicaragua and the Sandinistas and all these things of sneaking drugs and guns. Back and forth between South America or Central America and Louisiana and Arkansas.
I'm calling it right now. It's a 9 out of 10 for me.
I mean, it's fine. I saw it 6 days ago, and I remember very little about it.
Yeah.
Other than that, I enjoyed it well enough at the time. That's American Made. And then here's a movie that we both saw. It's on the Netflix.
Yeah, I don't know if you people know this, but here's what's going to happen for our future. Sometimes we're going to talk a movie about movies that never open in the theater that are worth mentioning, and we see them and talk about them, and they're new, and you can just sit at home and watch them technically for just the subscription price.
Yeah.
Kind of sort of free.
Basically free, yeah. More free for some than others.
Mm-hmm.
We probably won't review a lot of these movies because we won't see them. But this one, Gerald's Game.
Based on Stephen King. Did you read it?
No.
Nor did I.
Stephen King having a big year. Big year for Stephen King.
Yeah. Yeah, getting blocked on Twitter from Donald Trump. Is that what you're referring to?
That too.
Okay. Our good friend of the show, Scott Weinberg, was originally feeling like Gerald's Game, which he loved and read, was unfilmable.
I just knowing the premise, I can see why people would think that.
Same here.
It sounds unfilmable. But then they filmed it.
And we watched it, and now we're going to discuss.
Right. It is both filmable and watchable.
Hey, guess what? Fun fact. I found out on the radio this morning when attempting to say Carla's last name, I couldn't do it. I literally had like that, you know, usual Jeff Bayer, whatever we want to call it. What do we call that? You should diagnose it since you have to deal with it more than anyone else besides our listeners.
It's kind of a brain fart. It seems like you kind of panic. You see a name and you get self-conscious about whether you're going to do it right. So even if it's one that really is no problem, you kind of, you overthink it and mess yourself up. Yeah.
Yep.
I believe it's Carla Gugino. I believe Gugino is how we say her name. And she plays Jessie, and her husband is Gerald. That's Bruce Greenwood. And the movie is very simple setup. They go to their vacation home off somewhere, kind of secluded a little bit, summer home or something. And their marriage needs some spicing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, you're married. You know how it is when you need to spice up a marriage. What do you do? What do you introduce?
Handcuffs.
Handcuffs, exactly.
That's right.
And they do a little bit of that. And then, wouldn't you know it, while she's handcuffed to the bed, but stretched out, arms out, that kind of handcuffed, while she's handcuffed there, the husband drops dead. Heart attack.
Heart attack.
No!
Hang on. One more thing about the husband, Bruce Greenwood, who I've been a resurgent fan of Greenwood since he was in Star Trek from 2009.
Mm.
My goodness, for an older gentleman, he's got quite the build.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I was just like, gosh darn, Bruce Greenwood, you're working out.
It's almost like he knew he was going to be in a movie where he'd be in his underpants for a lot of it.
That's right.
Bruce Greenwood, I don't remember this being mentioned in the movie. His being older than her. Actually, they do make a reference to her kind of having daddy issues. That's right, they do. And there's a line that she married a man older. Yes. He is 15 years older than Carla Gugino. Anyway, so now this is like 15 minutes into the movie. And so we're set up. Now here she is, handcuffed to the bed, dead husband on the floor. No way to get the key to the handcuffs because, you know, she's handcuffed to the bed. What do you do?
So then it's just, I would say, a solid hour of her shuffling back and forth on the bed, trying to get out. The end.
No.
Luckily, there are some lovely, lovely layers here.
Luckily, she goes a little crazy.
She goes a little crazy. Starts talking to her dead husband. There's a wolf dog.
Just a dog.
Wolf?
Just a stray
just
dog.
Just a dog. Yeah. There's a dog. And there's also her remembering her past. And this all adds up to something really intense and occasionally hard to sit through in a good way.
This being handcuffed, aside from being its own problem for her, also brings up and is a reflection of earlier traumas she had.
Mm-hmm.
We see Henry Thomas, Elliot from E.T., all grown up as her dad in earlier
scenes.
Yeah,
he's not playing the same character.
No, he isn't. Well, what if he is?
What if he is? What if that's what became of him?
Yeah. But yeah, so she's having a conversation with her dead husband and with herself. I'm curious in the book whether it's described this way or whether it's described as just in her head, these people talking. But the movie shows them as actually walking around the room, her idealized version of herself, like her sort of conscience and her imagination of her dead husband arguing with each other and telling her things and helping her remember things. And yeah,
the possibility of what to do. Right. All of that sort of thing. And what I really liked about it was we see a marriage that's struggling. We don't, you know, get into huge specifics on why it is struggling, right. But then the past really brings to light, you know, how this woman dealt with trauma, suppressed trauma, but then also how trauma can relate to then that marriage and have a marriage struggle. Like all of that mm-hmm. is done just really with high quality. It's Mike Flanagan directing it, and impressive considering, you know, there's not a lot of movement in the movie.
Yeah, we're all basically in this one room.
Yeah, the majority is just simply the bed. I thought it was all super solid. I have an issue that I don't know if we're ready to get to, which is more about the end.
Right.
But yeah.
Mike Flanagan also directed Oculus, about the Haunted Mirror, a few years ago, which was better than it should have been. And then Hush, which I really liked last year, about the deaf woman being harassed at her house.
Yes.
Remember that
yes.
home invasion thing with the deaf woman?
That's also on Netflix, and that's another one. If you're obsessed with watching some scary movies in October, you can add Hush to your list.
Yes, that's Gerald's. Mike Flanagan's thing, I guess, is women sort of trapped in
women at home
in houses. Yeah, and he also did Ouija: Origin of Evil last fall, which again was much better than you'd expect the Ouija board origin movie to be. So this is a good director here. This Mike Flanagan. Yeah, Gerald's Game is quite solid. There's one specific moment at Fantastic Fest when it played. Everyone talked about it. They just said, there's that moment. Mm-hmm. And someone heard Will Goss make a sound they'd never heard before at that moment and things like that. And I wondered, well, I know
was
the
it,
moment.
Was it silence?
I'll probably know the moment.
Wait, was it silence?
The thing they'd never heard from Goss? That's funny.
I'm kidding. I love you, Goss, if you listen. I don't think he listens. We'll find out right now.
Why would he?
Why? I don't.
And then sure enough, when the moment arrived, I knew which moment they meant.
There's
no question which moment, which moment it is.
Yeah.
There nothing happens in the movie that will make you think, oh, was that the moment? No, you'll know it happens.
It's kind of like if somebody watched The Sixth Sense and was like, what was the twist? I didn't. Right. No, you know. You know what the twist was. This isn't a twist. This is just a moment.
It's more of a rip than a twist. But yeah, and it's quite a moment. Gerald's Game, it's a B+. Gerald's Game.
Gerald's Game is a 7 out of 10 for me. I apologize that they can't be BS approved. And here's the reason why.
You didn't like the ending?
The very ending to me is a different film than what I watched. And very much like in Stephen King's It, mm-hmm. the movie version, you described how it's like, do we really need all these kids? I was under the impression that, yes, we did need all these kids. And you were under the impression the only reason we have all these kids is because they were in the book.
Right.
This, to me, is the same thing. Look, I get it that was in the book. It didn't need to be in the movie.
Yeah, I wonder if it was in the book, because I think it changed some things from the book. And we won't tell you what, because I guess that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
But that may be one of the things that was different in the book. So, you know, maybe that is Mike Flanagan's fault. Now, let's talk about our movie of the month.
Well, before we do, why don't you insert the music for our movie of the month clip?
Okay, yeah, let's pretend I did that.
Oh, wait, or maybe you'll pleasure everybody with the singular greatest part about this film, which is, for me, somehow, impossibly, discovering a new Ray Charles song that I was unaware of.
Right, called In the Heat of the Night.
Which is played at the beginning and the end, and it's amazing. It's such a good song.
It's a great song. And of course, I like that the first thing we hear in the movie is the name of the movie, In the Heat of the Night.
Yeah.
That's the first line of the song, too.
Dude, I knew you would. It's like, I just called you dude.
Huh. I like that. In the Heat of the Night from 1967 was our movie of the month. This was an Academy Award winner, including Best Picture and Best Actor for Rod Steiger. And it was also nominated, won for editing, best sound, and for adapted screenplay. Also nominated for directing and sound effects.
Hang on. Sydney wasn't nominated?
He was not nominated. And I was going to say, I thought he was nominated for Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which was the same year. But that was not the case either.
Well, interesting. So that is the most racist thing about the movie now.
Possibly.
The fact that Sidney Poitier was not even nominated.
But, you know, it was a tough year. I suspect happened there because
that's so ridiculous.
Both of these films, In the Heat of the Night and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, were both nominated for Best Picture, both starring Sidney Poitier. I suspect there was some vote splitting. That happens a lot when people have two movies up for consideration and winds up getting neither of them. But yeah.
Yeah, this is Sparta, Alabama. And goodness, there is some
Mississippi.
There is. Oh, gosh. Sorry, Mississippi.
They're essentially the same.
There is some racism going on in this small town.
Well, there was in 1967.
Yeah, I'm sure it's all gone now.
I'm sure it's fine now. It's a little small town, a little racist sheriff. Everybody's racist. Assume racist. Yeah. Just assume that.
Very weird kind of a beginning where we're at this diner and we're just trying to get to know some of the side characters in the film. And I couldn't place mm-hmm. what the heck the purpose of tone or oddity was going on here. But
it makes sense later.
Makes sense later, but it's just like almost like, all right, fine, I've witnessed this. Let's get on with the show.
Right,
and the show is mainly Rod smacking some gum and then getting to know Sidney Poitier.
Poitier plays Tibbs, who is a homicide detective in Philadelphia.
Best of the best. Love movies that have the best of the best in them.
He's in town visiting his mother, and then...
Whoa, what do you have against this mother?
I don't know. Does she exist? We never see her.
It's true. Really should have gone... Oh, wait.
He's called upon...
Was he in between trains?
He had been visiting her and was waiting to go back home again.
Okay, so again. That's where she lived?
I gather, yeah. The TV show that was a sequel to this had it that his mother lived there and he came back later for her funeral and was convinced to stay like full time and live there and help solve crimes. So in the movie, he is asked to help solve this murder. Well, first, he's accused of committing the murder. You know how it is, because he's a black guy. He's a black guy they don't recognize, and there was a murder. Then they find out he didn't do it, and he's a cop, and so he winds up staying to help out.
It was for me, because it was, you know, you know of the existence of this film. You're aware that there was the TV show. That was my perspective of this. And I actually my mom was in town and was she watched the first part with me. And like, you know, there was a moment we paused it and I turned to her and it was still the beginning. I was like, it's so weird. I was under the impression that he was like working the case, like he was a cop. I didn't realize he was trying to like fight to save his freedom. And then it's like, boom, he is the cop.
So once again, shut up and watch the movie.
Shut up and watch. Well, we had to pause it for kids' sake. But there is like great dialogue throughout. But when he says, "May I see the man I was supposed to have killed?"
Mm-hmm.
Just like that Virgil Tibbs to a T is just like, I will cross the line on rare occasion, but I know that line and it still gives me fear. Rightfully so, when you're in the South and you're a black man in the 60s.
He's smarter and he dresses better and he makes more money than the local cops, which of course makes them even more resentful. Mm-hmm. It's what a delicate tightrope the character has to walk, knowing that he is smarter and better in a lot of ways than these rednecks, but still having to be deferential to them and put up with a lot of garbage. And there's the moment in it, a very famous moment with the slapping. There's a slap.
I didn't know. I knew they call me Mr. Tibbs,
right?
Which, for the record, I'm surprised they don't call him Officer Tibbs. I'm just saying, like, maybe it sounds better to say Mr. Tibbs, but maybe. Like, everybody else is referred to as officer if they're like, or I guess he's detective.
Maybe detective Tibbs.
They call me Detective Tibbs.
Yeah, this slap. Yeah. Old white racist slaps him in the face and he slaps him right back.
It was amazing.
And
speaking of amazing, with that, one of our listeners, Joshua, the part where Sidney Poitier's character slaps him, caught him completely off guard, stood up and involuntarily said, "Whoa." And he said it just as if he was witnessing an amazing slam dunk.
I gather that was the response in 1967 too. There's a terrific book, by the way, called Pictures at a Revolution by Mark Harris that is about this movie and the other four Best Picture nominees from 1967 and how they represented this shift in film and, you know, American history and everything. It was in the heat of the night. Guess who's coming to dinner? Bonnie and Clyde, The Graduate, and Dr. Doolittle, which represented like the old style, old, big, expensive musical that was falling out of favor. Really fascinating book if you like behind the scenes Hollywood stuff and also putting it all in the context of society at large. But this book talks about how the slap was, yes, a big deal. Norman
Jewison, like, racists left the theater because of the, I wonder, you know what I mean? I wonder if it was too much for, oh, go ahead.
Let me finish talking and I'll tell
you. No, I'd rather interrupt you. People who listen to the show know the flow, buddy. You got to get used to it.
The director, Norman Jewison, and there's at a pre-screening, said at first he was concerned that the early moments are kind of light and kind of bumbly and silly a little bit with the small town cops. He worried that the people were thinking it was a comedy, but then their stunned reaction to the slap made him realize, oh no, this is working as a drama. And Steiger and Poitier sometimes would go to a theater in New York to amuse themselves by seeing how audiences reacted to that. And yeah, some, you know, probably not in New York so much, but in other parts of the country, yeah, racists were, you know, would not put up with that. But generally, audiences were delighted, and there'd be like lots of, oh, and, astonishment. It was like this electrifying moment to see someone stand up like that.
Oh, and before I forget, I had mentioned the smacking of the gum.
Yes.
Carol Connor, I guess, did the same thing in the TV show. That's what Nico says, one of our listeners. And it bugged the heck out of him. Do you have a comparison? Did you ever watch that show?
No, I never watched. Watched the TV show.
I'm curious if it's just the same, because for me, it was like, all right, buddy, let's tone it down with the gum. Please do that.
I noticed him chewing gum in the movie, but it didn't bother me.
It faded away for me after about 10 to 20 minutes. But otherwise, I was like, is he really still working on it?
Yeah, really likes his gum. Nothing wrong with that.
Really likes his gum. So the actual story, though, is it's, you know, it's detective work and
solving a murder.
It is this small town, and there's like kind of two almost rival companies competing for work in the area. One is a engineering company, and the other is cotton.
Cotton, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what it is. And Tibbs is constantly at his wit's end, but also such a good detective that, like, he's itching to solve this. He can't get enough of this case. He loves this case.
Another thing I noticed about the movie is that the sheriff drinks a Dr. Pepper, and then at the diner, there are signs for both Coke and Pepsi. I don't know if I've ever seen a movie that had all three of those brands also prominently living together in peace and harmony. Pepsi and Dr. Pepper you see together a lot, but Coke and Pepsi, both prominently at the same place. I feel like in a movie that it'd be one or the other.
Yeah, there is there's a naked woman, and we find out later her age is only 16.
Yeah, she's not too naked, something. Fortunately.
No, she's not too naked, and she's definitely not a 16-year-old actress in any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. But that's part of the unraveling, and I really did like where it went, how he was solving the case, and ultimately what the end result was.
Right.
Because at first I was just like, is this going to be a satisfying detective story amongst all of this really good quality 60s racism?
Yeah, and it is a good, pretty good, you know, standard police detective solving a murder kind of story.
Yep.
It works very well as that.
I have a nomination for the worst job ever. You know when they're thinking about lynching him?
Yes.
Bunch of white guys in the town all get together toward the end of the film. So at one point, they get to his car. They find his parked car. And they're like, okay, he's not here. One guy out of this group of 20 has to wait by the car. And like, here's the thing. You know he's a detective. You know he's very intelligent, whether you, like, in this, like, this character's mind, you want to believe he's an intelligent black man or intelligent in general, whatever the case. But you also know he's armed.
Right.
And you are one guy at night waiting by a car being like, okay, guys, don't worry. I'm stuck here. That's got to be rough.
It is.
That's not a fun night.
And also, that cracker, he wanted to help with the lynching, but he's got to be one that stays back behind in case he comes back to his car. I wanted to help with the lynching.
Yeah, he didn't even mind, it seemed like. He was like, all right, got it. This is my job. Or maybe he's not as racist. Maybe not.
He got got dragged along with his friends, didn't really want to be in the lynching, and he was relieved that he got to have this job.
And if Virgil came back, he was just going to be like, can you hit me over the head and just drive away?
Yeah.
Because then my friends won't kill me.
Right.
Or think that I, you know, appreciate you.
Let's go with that.
Let's decide that. He's a nice guy.
Rod Steiger. Less famous than Sidney Poitier. I guess this is obviously more of a groundbreaking thing for Poitier than for Steiger. But Steiger, very good. And he died in 2002. He was pretty old.
Norman's also gone, right?
Norman Jewison, the director?
Yes. Or no, he's not. But he has stopped working because he was born in 1926.
Yeah, he's 91. Yeah, when was his last?
His last movie was 2003's The Statement with Michael Caine.
I remember that movie.
I didn't see it. Worth it?
I recall it being good enough, yeah. Hmm. Norman Jewison had a varied career, made In the Heat of the Night.
Yeah.
He then made The Thomas Crown Affair, Fiddler on the Roof, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Moonstruck.
Rollerball. Don't forget Rollerball. Oh. No, he directed Moonstruck.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Moonstruck in 87.
You know a movie that I watched way too much?
Hmm.
1994, Only You. That had some heavy rotation.
Robert Downey Jr. and Marissa Tomei. Yeah.
And the sidekick, Bonnie Hunt. My goodness, Bonnie Hunt, why aren't you in more movies?
I don't think I ever saw that movie. What else about In the Heat of the Night? Most of it takes place at night, like the middle of the night. The first scene, the night of the murder is like 2 a.m. They keep talking about it being 2 a.m. And then they go back and they recreate it and it's 2 a.m. again. I feel like these people just up all night all the time. And it's always sort of a hot, not even summer, because the calendars say it's September. But it's
there is talk of nights. Air conditioning's not working and heat. So they really do combine both factors of the title in the film. Great point.
You get the sense of it being hot and nighttime. Yeah. And it feels authentic.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was a novel either.
And
I know you've read books, but you have not read that one, I assume.
I have not read that particular book, no. The book was set in South Carolina. They moved it farther south for the movie, I guess, to make it more racist. The farther south you go, the more racist it is. Like Antarctica, the most racist place in the world.
No, it's strictly based in America.
Oh, just America, okay.
Don't forget that.
All right. So that's our movie of the month, In the Heat of the Night. I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy that movie?
I very much enjoyed watching that movie, and I will be downloading that Ray Charles song very soon.
Our movie of the month for next month.
Another somewhat topical film, even though it's nearing 100 years old.
Yeah, from 1940. Well, it's nearing 80 years old. Not too old.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I don't know. Why was I thinking 1926?
Well, because it's a Charlie Chaplin movie, and so you think of it being, you know, the 20s and longer ago. This is one of his later movies. The Great Dictator from 1940, starring Charlie Chaplin as Schmadolf Schmittler or something. Somebody who is, you know, not Hitler, but Hitler. This is one of the ones that I'm most ashamed not to have watched, because I've seen most of the other major Charlie Chaplin movies.
And you love?
I love Hitler.
There you go.
Well, I love jokes about Hitler. I love satire of all that stuff. Yeah. So I ought to have seen this a long time ago. And now I will.
Ooh, Hank Mann plays stormtrooper stealing fruit.
Hank Mann! He's Hank Mann, a man with all the powers of a Hank.
Hank Mann, Emma Dunn. We got some names here.
Emma Dunn? No, not yet. Keep going. Emma Dunn? Ooh, let's just make
Grace this. Hale? Can you do Grace Hale? You got anything there?
Grace Hale, what are you doing?
Billy Gilbert.
Up yours, Billy Gilbert.
Jack Oakey.
I'm done with that. I'm done with that.
We petered out there, everybody, but it was a good start.
Peter Doubt. So watch The Great Dictator if you never have. Watch it this month, and we'll talk about it on the first show of November.
And we'll toss this up on Facebook also. If you have watched it or if you do watch it, find that Facebook post of ours and add a little something to it.
Sure.
And then maybe you'll be mentioned on the show if it's something worthwhile.
If you have something to say. Don't talk just to hear yourself talk. But if
I'm really like Sidney Poitier. Oh, my gosh.
Well, let's see who else was nominated. Let's get to the bottom of that. I mean, they probably would have put him up for supporting actor anyway.
They probably would, even though it's two leads.
Yeah, it's co-leads, but they don't like to split them up. Sure. So the best supporting actors, the winner was George Kennedy from Cool Hand Luke, the prison guard guy.
John, super good.
John Cassavetes in The Dirty Dozen, Gene Hackman in Bonnie and Clyde, Cecil Kellaway from Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, I don't remember what character that is, and Michael J. Pollard from Bonnie and Clyde. I'm not familiar.
And what about lead?
Lead, you had Rod Steiger, you had Warren Beatty in Bonnie and Clyde.
Obviously worth, yeah.
Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate.
Of course.
Paul Newman, Cool Hand Luke.
Okay.
Spencer Tracy, a posthumous nomination because he had died for Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Okay.
So best actor was a very tight race.
Best actor was full, understood, especially, yes.
And best supporting actor, I don't remember Cassavetes and Dirty Dozen particularly, but it's hard to argue with those too much. So
okay.
Let's assume if there had been six nominees, one would have been for Poitier.
Let's just do it.
Let's assume that.
Just like the nice guy by the car, we're going to assume some things.
It's good to give people the benefit of the doubt. Let's assume the best. Let's do that.
Yep.
I probably remember to cut that burp out.
So on to our DVDs. There's only two. There's only two worth mentioning this week.
Yeah, I guess so. One of them is The Book of Henry, which is worth mentioning.
It is a train wreck I have not seen yet, but I know it's a wreck of massive proportions.
It's worth seeing because it's not unwatchable. It's not that it's badly made. It's competent as far as that goes.
Is the guy that made it again? Is this Colin?
Colin Trevorrow, or Trevorrow.
This movie may have gotten this guy fired from a Star Wars flick.
When it came out and was so badly received, people wondered if maybe the next step would be him not directing Star Wars Episode IX. And sure enough, he's not. Book of Henry, worth seeing just because of the crazy things that it does. And then, Goon, Last of the Enforcers, which was on VOD a few weeks ago, is on DVD now, if you want to check that out on physical media. And A Ghost Story.
So, did you see this movie twice already?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Okay. And the second time was when?
Second time was the press screening here.
In Portland. Okay. Yeah. Did your opinion change at all, or did it just solidify?
More solidified. I really like it.
Right. Really like it. And I came away from it feeling like, all right, this is I watched it at the wrong time, but under those conditions, I gave it, I think, a 5. I was like, it was an interesting attempt that did not work for me. And here's what I'm doing currently.
All right.
I'm in a hold pattern. I have the movie. I am looking forward to watching it, but here's what I've decided. I want to give this movie the absolute best chance to succeed.
Sure.
And since there is a lot of quiet, and for me, quiet normally means potential self-reflection during the movie,
right,
or just a wandering mind because I have that. Currently, my wife and I are in an absolutely fine part of our relationship. That's it. It's good.
All right.
But we're celebrating soon. We're finally getting a moment to celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary.
Right.
I'm going to watch it after that. When I adore her again, because I know that's going to happen. Because anytime we finally get away from the kids and have a moment to hang out, she's amazing.
Right.
So
right.
After that, I'm going to watch it. And then I'm going to find out if this movie is for me or not.
So
I'm going to give it its best chance because it would make it potentially sadder for the loss of relationship and reflection and everything else like that. When I'm like, super high.
You're saying that you're going to wait to rewatch this movie until your relationship with your wife is as good as it can possibly be.
No, just until it's great.
Okay.
And I see great really close on the horizon. Like great is like a week or two away.
Oh, but it's not great right now.
But there's nothing wrong with that. That happens all the time in relationships where it's just like you're going through the flow. You haven't hung out lately because you got everything else busy and people are in town or you're out of town or blah, blah,
blah. If you
watched
the movie now, you'd be concerned that it would make you not like your wife as much?
No. It's not that. I wouldn't give the movie my greatest chance of success of enjoyment.
I see.
Because so, I am such an easily susceptible person with outside life and movies and all of this sort of stuff. I admit this about me.
Okay. So you want to wait until you're in your best place to give the movie its best chance. Okay. All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I guess. That's exhausting. That is exhausting, but fair.
It is. Oh, and bad news. I was hoping to get costume ideas because our almost 5-year-old had declared that he wanted to be a ghost for a solid about 2 months.
Oh, nice. That's easy.
For Halloween.
Yeah.
Shifted. Now he wants to be a dragon.
Ooh.
Which is more difficult, but we found an acceptable costume, except he's decided. We don't know how or what he's thinking, but he's like, okay, great, but we're going to have to make our own tail. And he like starts to talk about a tail that we don't possibly understand how to make.
The costume not come with a tail, or he doesn't?
No, it comes with a tail.
He wants to make his own.
So we're gonna have to we figure at least we'll get this. We'll put it on him. He'll decide if that's a good enough tail, and if not, then he can slowly realize how impossible it is to make a dragon tail. That's the goal.
What do you mean impossible to make a dragon tail?
How would you make a dragon tail?
Well, now
I'm trick or treating.
Now I'm thinking of various things you could use. You could use, you know what you could do? Get a bunch of toilet paper rolls, just the cardboard tubes, and string them together like a long string through them all.
Oh.
You know? And have kind of like a snake tail kind of dragon behind them.
Now, are you saying just like start excessively using toilet paper to get enough rolls? Or are you saying, you know what? It's a costume. Just go for it. Like, just rip off that toilet paper, get the rolls.
I don't think you should waste the toilet paper, but whatever you need to do to get the right number of toilet paper rolls, I suppose.
Maybe we should just have a toilet paper box in our house instead of rolls. Maybe that's the future of toilet paper anyway. Maybe the rolls are overrated.
I'm saying that would be, off the top of my head, that seems like a way you can make a dragon tail with the toilet paper rolls.
Wait a minute. I'm going to blow your mind here.
All right.
Paper towel rolls.
Yes. Although since they're longer, you'd have less flexibility in the tail. But yes,
isn't that exactly like a dragon? I mean, how much flexibility does a dragon really have in their tail? Have you talked to a dragon lately?
I don't know.
I don't know how it works.
But yes, paper towel rolls also would work, seems like. There you go. See? Done and done.
Whew. I'm going to use this idea as my own and see how impressed Lisa is with it.
Okay.
And if she's like, what, that's not going to work, then I'll let her know it was your idea.
Thank you. That's fair.
Yep. Yep.
The point is, we have a copy of a ghost story that we can give away.
Oh, were we talking about movies? Let's do a podcast.
There's no money in it. If you're one of our agents, which means you're one of our patrons through Patreon, then you are eligible. Just send us an email, moviebspdx@gmail.com, and say you're an agent and you want to be eligible to win a ghost story. And we'll choose one of you at random if you haven't won in the last 6 months.
And if you're one of our chips, you pretty much don't have a chance to win these DVDs, so you should become a patron.
Right.
Or you should become an agent instead.
Right. And you better believe I'm keeping track of who wins stuff and when.
I figured you would.
Well, we do it for several months now. We got to start keeping track and make sure we don't have the same people coming back every time.
Yeah, because, I mean, I once knew an Eric who always wanted to believe the best in people, but sure.
Well, sometimes people...
Benefit of the doubt.
Forget. And some people are just liars. And some people are greedy. That brings us to the end of our show. Let's recap. Blade Runner 2049. It didn't do it for me. It did more for you.
It did more for me, and if you're excited about it, see it on the biggest screen possible.
I mean, I do feel like if you love the first Blade Runner, that you're bound to love this one. I feel like that's pretty consistent.
And I did like this more than I've liked the original.
Gerald's Game on Netflix, we both liked.
Yes.
Good one to check out. If you are an agent and would like to win a copy of A Ghost Story, send us an email. And that's it. Until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.